BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone. Today is Monday, September 10th, 2012, and this is podcast number 202. As I've been doing here lately, I want to give you kind of an update on what's going on with the website at BadQuaker.com. We are working with a company called Notion 3, and they are in the process of rebuilding the whole website so that it has a completely different look and feel. In addition to that, I'm working with some of the individuals on the internet who have made one of the best forums on the internet, in my opinion. That one of the best forums on the internet, in my opinion, is the Survival Podcast Forum. It's just a wonderful community. I've spent a lot of time over there. I have good friends over there. And some of the top people from that forum are helping Cindy and I. Cindy is my wife, and she's actually the owner of BadQuaker.com website. And some of the folks from the Survival Podcast forum are helping us to actually build a Bad Quaker forum. And we've been playing with it all, over the weekend and trying to get the thing so that it's functional. And eventually, as soon as we can get it all put together, we'll make it public. And the same way with the new website, as soon as Notion 3 can get all the work done, and there's a lot of work, as soon as they can get all the work done, we'll bring it all out into the public and let everybody see it and let all the listeners take a look at it. And I'm sure you'll enjoy the new website. And as I've said before, among the things that'll be on the website is a separate section with a reading list, with suggested reading, a book list that I've come up with. And on the forum too, it'll be a good place to go into more depth on things like that, like talking about specific books and so forth. Also on the forum, I currently spend too much time on Facebook, and I'm over there, I'm throwing out a paragraph here and there, or throwing out a few sentences, or sharing a picture, or something like that. And what I really think would be more profitable is if I was doing that on the Bad Quaker forum. I can make the same kind of statements, I can share the same kind of pictures, I can do all this stuff that I'm doing on Facebook, I could do that on the forum, and it would be, for my listeners and for our community more than out there, tossing it towards people who really don't care or don't want a constant libertarian things throwing at them on Facebook. And there are people who complain about that too. So anyway, so that's the goal. That's what we want to do. But there's good things about Facebook too. I met a wonderful author on Facebook, and we're starting to become pretty good friends. His name is Taryn, and he actually let me read a pre-published version of a new book that he's got coming out. The book is, it's not available yet, but it's called One Nation Under Blood, and it's a work of fiction, and it's really pretty impressive. I sat down with it, I think it was Saturday. I sat down with my wife's Kindle, and just couldn't pull myself away from it, and just burned the battery right out of her Kindle. I mean, didn't actually burn it, but I drained it right down to where we had to plug it in, and I had to stop reading, because it's just so captivating. I can't wait until the actual real version comes out, because what I was reading was the pre-edited version, and it was sort of a shortened version, but it was really good. It was called One Nation Under Blood, and the same author, I'll put a link in today's show notes to his page over at Amazon. Some of the other stuff he's worked on is Pirates of Savannah. There's a book series called Pirates of Savannah. And he's got one book that's really worth picking up. It's called Serious Revenge and the Art of Stealth. He's got another one that's a child's book. It's really fun for, you know, for kids and so forth. It's called Catch That Collie. But again, I'll put a link to his page, to his Amazon page, with the show notes for today. But check him out. It was really kind of him to let me preview that book, and I really appreciate it. I'm probably going to write up a review, maybe put it in Amazon or something when the book comes out. I might even be able to talk him into coming on the show. I tried to have a chance to speak with him at Pork Fest this year, but he was just so fogged over. You know, people were just, you know, coming up to his booth and just constantly, there was always a line every time I went by there. So I thought, well, I don't want to bother him. You know, he's there trying to do business, and he, you know, I would just be getting in the way of him trying to do business there. So I left him alone at Pork Fest, but I hope at the next Pork Fest, I hope to be able to spend some time with him. He's, you know, I've really, on Facebook, I've really got to know him pretty good. Now, one of the things that comes up in his book, One Nation Under Blood, is it's sort of a futuristic situation that happens. I won't go into it very much today, but in it, silver and gold and barter trading and things like this become very important in the future in that book. But at the same time, you know, if you, I don't know if you watch or not, but today, this morning, I looked and silver is at $33.50 an ounce. That's a pretty dramatic increase. Back like in July, it was down around 27. It's not quite as high as it was back in March when it was hitting around 38, but it's coming back up and it's going to go up more. There's been news, and gold's following pretty much the same pattern. It was at highs back in March, and it kind of sank through the summer, but it's coming back pretty quick. And part of this is because the Federal Reserve is letting the cat out of the bag, that not only did they pump a whole lot more money into the economy than they let on, but they're in the process of pumping more in the next few months. And so that's going to, see, what you have to keep in mind when you're looking at precious metals or pretty much anything like that, when you look at the price of them, you know, you think in terms of dollars. What are they worth? What's their spot price? You know, how many dollars per ounce or whatever like this. But what you're not really thinking about so often is that you're not really looking at the what you're seeing is the value of the dollar fluctuating. You're not seeing the value of the metal. Because in real terms, the value of silver and of gold and things like this, in real value, they change very little over the centuries. What you're seeing change is the perceived value of fiat currency, the perceived value of the dollar. That's really what's changing. So as the dollar becomes worth less and less until it becomes worthless, it appears as though the price of precious metals is going up. But in all actuality, the price of precious metals is not changing. The dollar itself is becoming worth less and less and less. That's what's happening. And, you know, there's a couple of logical progressions where this has to take us. At some point in time, you know, this all began, of course, 100 years ago, 1913, when the Federal Reserve was formed. And, you know, in case you're a new listener, or in case you haven't really heard me talk about this before, or maybe you're new to the Liberty Movement or whatever, the Federal Reserve is not an aspect of the government. It's a private banking institution that's authorized by Congress to take certain activities. But it's a private corporation. It's just like Bank of America. It's just like several other banks like that. It is a private corporation. It's not part of the government. Now, it works with the government the way General Electric works with the government, and Monsanto works with the government, and a lot of other corporations work with the government. But it's a private corporation. And some people think you're lying when you say that, or some people think you just don't understand, or you're confused. But that's it. Go to their website and check it out. It's right there. You know, look it up in Wikipedia. Now, why is that important? Well, you know, I'll get into that in a minute. I don't think I want to go in that direction just yet. I really wanted to talk about libertarians for a moment. And I want to talk about, you know, in the past I was talking about different organizations, and I was talking about in two podcasts, I was talking about mimics. Mimics in nature are a creature that tries to, well, one form of a mimic is where a creature tries to make itself look like a different creature for some reason. An example of this, there's a variety of snakes, like a gopher snake that you have out west. There are gopher snakes that kind of look like a rattlesnake. They don't really, if you really look at them, but they kind of, at a glance, they kind of look like a rattlesnake. And what a gopher snake will often do is it will coil like a rattlesnake, and it'll actually take its tail and kind of smack it into leaves so it sounds like it's rattling. This is mimic behavior. It's doing it for self-defense. It's making itself seem like it's something that it's not. Another type of mimic is like, I put a picture on the badquaker.com website when I did these podcasts on mimics. I put a picture of a deep-sea fish that has a thing that's kind of like a fishing pole that protrudes out of its forehead and dangles a thing that kind of looks like a worm, and it dangles that right in front of its own mouth. And so it'll hold really, really still and dangle this thing in front of its mouth. And when a fish comes up to bite what it thinks is the worm, or, you know, something, it doesn't necessarily know it's a worm, but it sees something moving there and it thinks it's food. And so it comes up to bite that little piece of food. And of course, the fish is much bigger. It bites that fish. You know, the mimic eats the thing that came up that thought it was going to get that bait. And that's how mimics work. They appear to be one thing when in all actuality they're something else. And they will use trickery of one kind or another to get behavior out of the victim that they're, or, you know, in a defensive posture, they use mimicry to try to defend themselves. And I was talking at the time about different libertarian organizations, or so-called libertarian organizations, that are either misguided, they are among us, and they're trying their best to do what they're trying to do, but they're just, you know, seriously misguided. And because of that, a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of people's, you know, they really pour themselves, a lot of effort goes into these things, and a lot of money goes into these things, and they're misguided, and they completely, they're not helping in the cause of liberty. But the people involved in them are so busy, and the people who financially support them are so convinced that this is the good way to go, that they never stop and really, they never look at the principles behind it and say, is this accomplishing what we want it to accomplish? Are these dollars going to the best position? I think one of the organizations that I talked about in that podcast has a budget of something like, I can't remember now if it was $13,000, $14,000 a month just for this one program. $14,000 a month for one program? And what are they trying to do? They're trying to get government to fix government. What if you had, what if you took some other well-known organization in the liberty movement, you know, that's actually doing something, and you gave them a budget of $14,000 a month? What if you took something like Freedom's Phoenix and you gave those guys $14,000 a month to work with? Holy cow! What if you took an organization like 4409? They're fun guys. I like to watch their YouTube videos, and they've come a long way. They were a bit misguided in the beginning, but they've come a long way, and they're doing really well now. But what if you took just some small organization like that and gave them a $14,000 a month budget? What if you just handed the Free State Project $14,000 a month budget? What kind of an impact would that have? And yet, it's all going to a beltway libertarian organization that's trying to go in and lobby Congress to get Congress to do things for them. How horribly misguided. What a tragic waste of human effort, of emotion, and of time, and of money. What a horrible waste. And that's not even to mention the Cato Institute. I'm not talking about the Cato Institute. If you if you didn't hear those podcasts I'm referring to, or if you did and you know you're not sure about which ones that I'm specifically, I'm not talking about the Cato Institute. The Cato Institute is even bigger. They have an even, you know, they have a massive budget compared to that. Now, here's a fun story. The Cato Institute recently got themselves a new president. The old president of the Cato Institute that's been there for years has stepped away, and the new Cato president, his name is John Allison, and there's a lot of people over at Cato that are really concerned about this, and well, they should be. He is a Randian. Let me read to you a quote. This is from a letter that he sent out, an email actually that he sent out to the folks at the Cato Institute to try to calm them and try to tell them, hey, it's okay, I'm one of you, don't worry. This is his. John Allison's words to the Cato Institute to try to calm them. I have come to appreciate that all objectivists are libertarians, but not all libertarians are objectivists. I respect this distinction, although I consider anarchy to be dangerous. And then he goes on to say, having run a large organization with many different constituents, I am a big tent thinker. I have long encouraged the ARI, which is the Ayn Rand Institute, to work with Cato. Furthermore, one of the reasons I came to Cato is that I believe we can play a leadership role in the greater free society movement without sacrificing our principles. So what does he say here, really? You know, he says, and of course that's just a little outtake of his whole email, but he says, first off, he makes this odd argument that objectivists are libertarians. That's interesting, because Ayn Rand would have argued with him on that point. As a matter of fact, she probably would have banished him from her presence over that point. So he's taking a position that Ayn Rand would not have taken, and she invented objectivism. And he's taking a position that she likely would have shunned him over. So, and then he goes on, well, and plus that, in addition to that, it's not really logical. Well, I'll get into that in a minute. But then he goes on to say, he says, although I consider anarchy to be dangerous. So, and then a couple minutes later, he says he's a big tent thinker. So he's a big tent thinker, and he supposedly he doesn't want to sacrifice principles, and yet he doesn't want to let anarchists in that big tent. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's funny how these people. It's a nice derogatory term, isn't it? These people. It's funny how these people will always say these all encompassing phrases, you know. Oh, we have to hold to our principles. We have to do this without sacrificing our principles. We have to, and then they don't tell you what their principles are. But one of their principles appears to be that if you hold to a principle like the zero aggression principle, you're not accepted with them. You're not one of them. They don't want to talk to you. You're a radical. You're taking it too far. See. It's funny how they all want to embrace everybody except people who actually have and stand on a principle. And it's the same whether we're talking about property rights or the zero aggression principle, which really all logical, all solidly based principles can be brought down to a logical conclusion and be based upon either property rights or the zero aggression principle. If you think you're holding to a principle that's outside of those two, then if you begin to break it down and see really what it is, you'll find that there's a point in logic where it starts to fall apart. But if you take the property rights and the zero aggression principle, you can take them down to the smallest minute particle, or you can expand them outward to their fullest extent. What is their potential? And they still hold with their logical pattern. So, you know, when these people start talking about their principles, it's funny. First off, they rarely actually state what those principles are. They just refer to principles like, oh, I have principles. as opposed to those of us who actually talk about what a real principle is. And I'm going to get back to a real principle, the zero aggression principle, in just a minute. Stick with me, I'll be right back. I'd like to talk to you about Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. The Liberty Classroom is a collection of courses on history and Austrian economics presented in an easy, convenient way. There are video files and audio files you can download. You can participate in discussions online in the discussion boards. And there are live sessions with Tom Woods and the other educators where you can directly interact with the instructors. Now, who is this for? It's for anyone who realizes that they didn't get the real story in government-approved schools. It's also great for homeschoolers and unschoolers. Join Tom Woods and his team, and they'll equip you with one of the very best tools the Liberty Movement has to offer, knowledge, real knowledge in a usable form. At Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, you can get all this for only $99 a year. Now, that's less than the cost of one movie DVD a month. This gets you access to absolutely everything on their site. All the courses, plus additional courses that'll be added later, the discussion forums, the live sessions, everything. So how do you do this? You go to badquaker.com. You click on the banner for Tom Woods Liberty Classroom. By using that link, you'll let Tom know that I sent you, and you'll help keep badquaker.com on the internet. Thank you very much. Would you like to do something to support badquaker.com? Here's how easy it is. If you're already going to buy something from Amazon, go to badquaker.com first. Click on any of the buttons for Amazon. Once at Amazon, shop like you normally would. You'll pay the same price for the things you buy from Amazon, but Amazon will give badquaker.com a tiny portion of that purchase. It's amazingly easy to shop at Amazon, it won't cost you any extra, and you'll be supporting badquaker.com. Thank you. Okay, thanks very much for sticking with me. Now, before the commercial, I was talking about the new Cato president, John Allison, and how he made the statement that all objectivists are libertarians, and how that's actually quite contradictory to what the inventor, the founder, or we might say, Ayn Rand herself, who was, you know, who the Ayn Rand Institute was named after. She did not accept that. Plus, you know, I talked about a debate between the president of the ARI and, who was that? I think it was Doug Casey. And Doug Casey made a simple statement about the right to, to possess firearms. And the president of the Ayn Rand Institute was just appalled. We can't have just anyone owning a gun. Well, see, they don't have a basic grasp of something like property rights. It's not, and by the way, it's not gun rights. You don't have a gun right, just like you don't have a bubblegum right, or you don't have a football right. It's a property right. It's not a matter of which property you're going to be allowed to own by your master. You see, if that's the case, then there is no property right. It's just permission by your master. Property right means the right to own and possess and do what you want with your own property, as long as you're not harming someone else. And it doesn't matter what that property is. And it's silly to try to separate property out and say, well, you have a right to this property, but you don't have a right to that property, or you have to have permission to use this property. No, you either have property right or you don't have the right to property. It's that simple. There's really no gray area, because the moment that you say that this particular property has restrictions on it, then you have put into someone else's hands the authority to regulate that property. Therefore, you don't own that property. So the whole, you know, if the founder of the objectivist philosophy and the current president of the Ayn Rand Institute, if they both don't have a grasp of property rights and the zero aggression principle, and then how can you possibly consider them libertarian? How can objectivists be libertarians if the founder and the president of the biggest organization of them today don't understand basic property rights and don't adhere to the zero aggression principle? Then what is a libertarian? How are you describing a libertarian? See, that's where the real problem is. That's why organizations like Cato are not able to hold to a principle because they don't have that principle. They don't hold to that principle. If they did hold to that principle, well, they wouldn't be in Washington, D.C. lobbying Congress. It's just that simple. Okay, now, you know, in keeping in mind what's going on with the Cato Institute and so forth, here's a fun fact. David Koch, that's spelled K-O-C-H, like Koch, but it's they pronounce it Koch for some reason. David Koch, which is one of the super, super rich billionaires that supports the Cato Institute, has now officially abandoned the Libertarian Party and has announced that he is a Republican. Shock! Oh no! Can you believe it? Yeah, I know. So here's his words. This is a quote from David Koch. The Libertarian Party is a great concept. I love the ideals, but it got too far off the deep end, and so I dropped it. I think the Republican Party has a great chance of succeeding, and that's why I support it. But I believe in the libertarian principles. Again, here's one of these Beltway libertarians, as they people call them, talking about principles. But of course, how can he be talking about libertarian principles and talking about how he loves the ideals, and yet he's embracing the Republican Party? How does that work exactly? And you know, and the way it works is that he doesn't actually grasp libertarian principles. And again, I'll get into that in just a second. I've got a little bit more Libertarian Party news here to relish in. In case you didn't notice, Wayne Allen Root has abandoned the Libertarian Party and has revealed himself as a Republican. He's going to be running for the Senate as a Republican from Nevada. Now, there's a real shocker, isn't it? That's almost the biggest shocker, is to find out that David Koch is really a Republican. Shocking, isn't it? So Wayne Allen Root, you know, he's, if you read what he said and if you listen to what he said, he's always been a Republican. He's just been one of the main people in the Libertarian Party. But so now he's out. He's over there where he always belonged. I can't help but to, you know, there's an old movie, Casablanca, and there's a scene in Casablanca where Rick, the saloon owner, he has part of his saloon is a little mini casino, and the local chief of police or whatever the guy is, whatever the magistrate is, is a frequenter of his casino. And so there's some kind of an excuse. The Nazis give the order, and the chief of police comes over and tells Rick, "I'm shocked. Shocked, do you hear, that there's gambling in this establishment?" And as he's saying this, the guy comes over, the waiter comes over and hands him his money because he had to cash out his chips before he closed down the casino. So here we have the chief of police who has been gambling in the casino. The Nazis tell him he has to close the place, so he goes and cashes out his chips prior to coming over and acting like he's shocked that he's to find out that there's gambling going on in this establishment. And that's kind of how it is when people like David Koch or you know, Wayne Allen Root or these other people reveal themselves to be Republicans. You know, I'm shocked to find out that they're actually Republicans. How can this be? Well, let me take a shot at Wayne Allen Root. This is from, now actually, Wikipedia hasn't caught up to this shocking news about it, Wayne Allen Root, but this is from the wiki page on Wayne Allen Root and talking about his political positions. Root supports smaller government, reduced spending, reduced entitlements, reduced bureaucracy, dramatically lower taxes, and greater personal freedom for individuals. In the area of education, he supports more parental control, more emphasis on school choice, moving education to the state and local levels, and increased competition through vouchers. Root and his wife choose to homeschool their children. Okay, well, let me interrupt. So he's, of course, he's rich, and so he can homeschool because he's rich. But for the other folks, he's not supporting homeschooling, he's supporting vouchers, which really, you know, sometimes there's some overlap in the voucher movement and the homeschool movement. But really, if you get in and you look at vouchers and where the ideas came from, and, you know, I've talked about vouchers before. Really, this is just a con by statists to try to get control back of something that they're losing control of, and that's education. Okay, so back to a Wiki's page on Wayne Allen Root. It says, he's a strong supporter of gun rights for the individuals. Root is a small businessman who believes the two-party system is built on corruption and greed and bribery. Well, that's funny. Then if that's really true, if he believes the two-party system is built on corruption and greed and bribery, why is he going back into the Republican Party and running as a Republican senator? That's a little contradictory. Maybe Wayne Allen Root doesn't have principles. Anyway, back to the thing. It says, he is a fiscal conservative in the mode of his heroes, Ronald Reagan and Barry Goldwater. Well, that reveals a lot, doesn't it? Because neither of those was libertarian. They were both conservative. You see, there's this lie that the conservatives and everybody on the right, really, constantly try to convince libertarians that, really, you guys are just confused. Really, there's no difference between conservatives and libertarians. All right, back to the thing here. Root calls for the repeal of the income tax and favors replacing it, as well as all other sources of federal tax revenue, with a tax on each state according to its population. And then he just wants the states to be able to figure out how to rob you. So really what that means is the states would just have an income tax, or the states would, you know, however the states would want to do it. Well, that's really solving the problem, isn't it? You're going to take the gun out of the hand of one robber and put it into the hand of the other robber, but either way you get robbed and the money goes in the same place that it went before. How can anybody buy that as a solution? Okay, now, here's the problem. So many libertarians, they get this in their mind that libertarianism is the adoption of specific policies, a specific position on each policy. So, somebody says, well, what's the libertarian position on abortion? Or what's the libertarian position on gun ownership? Or what's the libertarian position on the income tax? No, that is entirely backwards thinking. When you do that, you fall into the trap of the government. You've fallen into the state's trap, actually. If you adopt individual political positions based on this for or against dichotomy, really, at the moment that you try to do that, you've fallen into the trap of the state. You've abandoned real principles, and you've adopted the belief that the end justifies the means. You've stopped, and that becomes your principle. The end justifies the means becomes your principle that you believe in. If you adopt the zero aggression principle and you hold to it, and then someone comes to you and says, how do you believe about abortion? You have to look at it according to the zero aggression principle and property rights. And these two things in conjunction will give you the answer. And if somebody comes to you and says, well, what about gun rights? Look at it according to the zero aggression principle and property rights, and you come up with the answer. If somebody comes to you and says, what about invading Iran? Should we invade Iran? Look at it according to the zero aggression principle and property rights. You don't let these people on the right and these people on the left and the Democrats and the Republicans and the conservatives and the liberals and the communists and the socialists and the fascists, you don't let them take you onto their battleground to fight their battles. You stick with your principle. And if you have the principle of the zero aggression principle, and if you understand property rights, then everything boils back to that. And you don't have to take individual positions on individual each policy that comes up. You stop playing politics altogether, and you begin to become a moral person, and you begin to base the things that you believe and your actions on morality rather than political positions. I'm going to read the zero aggression principle for you real quickly here. The zero aggression principle is a moral stance which asserts that aggression is inherently illegitimate. Aggression, for the purpose of the zero aggression principle, is defined as the initiation or threatening of violence against a person or legitimately owned property of a person, specifically any unsolicited actions of others that physically affect an individual's property or person, no matter if the result of those actions is damaging, beneficial, or neutral to the owner, are considered aggression when they are against the owner's free will. This is the only logic-based measurement of good and evil in the human experience. So now, what do I mean by that? The only logic-based measurement of good and evil in the human experience. Anything that you want to consider, any action you want to consider, any government policy you want to consider, anything at all in the human experience that you want to think about, all you have to do is bump it up against the zero aggression principle and say, is this an aggression upon another person? And if it is, then you're violating the zero aggression principle. So, for example, let's say I walk over to a person, there's just a person standing on a street corner, and I walk over to them, and I take my finger, and I just flick them on the arm. I have violated the zero aggression principle. Certainly, I have not violated it to the same degree as if I walk over and shoot them in the arm, or if I shoot them in the head with a gun. I haven't violated I haven't aggressed upon them to the same degree. But a violation of the zero aggression principle is a violation. And if you noticed in there, in that definition, I said, even if those actions are damaging, beneficial, or neutral to the owner, to the property owner. So, for example, if I walk over to a guy and I grab him by his collar and I shake him and I shove $100 bills into his shirt, I am aggressing upon him. And he has every right to shoot me, hit me, stick a knife in my gut, whatever he needs to do to defend himself. It doesn't matter that what I'm doing is beneficial to him. I am violating the zero aggression principle, and I'm violating his property rights when I aggress upon him. You see, it doesn't matter if you're doing good with your aggression. If I walk over and I grab this guy by the throat, and I start shoving $100 bills into his shirt, it doesn't matter that I am doing something nice. If somebody tries that with me, I'm just going to stab them. I'm not going to stand there and let them aggress upon me. And that's what it really is. It doesn't matter if ultimately what they're doing is beneficial. And this is what so many libertarians can't get in their mind. They think, well, yeah, but if in the long run, if what we're doing is good, then it all balances out. No, it doesn't. You can't get a good end by committing an evil act. It's impossible. Two wrongs don't make a right. Five wrongs don't make a right. 10,000 wrongs don't make a right. When you violate someone's basic property rights, when you violate the zero aggression principle, it doesn't matter whether you help them, hurt them, or if your actions are entirely neutral. You have still violated that principle. And if you don't have the zero aggression principle as your measurement device, then you have something that you believe to be a principle, but it's not really. It's just a way to justify the ends by ignoring whatever means it is that you take to get to those ends. There's a longtime liberty activist named Lawrence Vance, and he writes very frequently over at Lou Rockwell at LRC at lourockwell.com. And I have a nice little quote from him. He's talking about presidential candidate Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate. He says, if Gary Johnson wasn't being compared with the Democrat and Republican clowns running for president, would libertarians even notice him? Sure, he favors legalizing marijuana, but so does every left-wing college student and Hollywood actor. Now, Lawrence Vance is doing a service here by pointing this out. Gary Johnson was a conservative Republican governor of New Mexico. And if you go back and you look at his record as a conservative governor of New Mexico, and he ran on a cut taxes and get tough on crime platform. And when he got in there, that's what he did. He cut taxes and he got tough on crime. He was a conservative. That's what conservatives always talk about. That's what they push for. That's what they're trying to do. That is not libertarian. Just because he's a doper, I mean, really, let's be honest about it. Just because he's a dopehead doesn't mean he's a libertarian. I'm a libertarian. I don't take dope. I don't smoke pot. None of those things. The two, there's no correlation between these two. And when libertarians embrace anybody who's for the legalization of marijuana and start to call them libertarians, you do a horrible disservice to our movement. There, you have to be able to distinguish the difference here. When Gary Johnson was on Bob Wenzel Bob Wenzel interviewed him on for his podcast. It showed very clearly, Gary Johnson's own words showed very clearly, he had no idea what libertarianism was. He thought it had something to do with Milton Friedman. And you know, it's funny because Milton Friedman was kind of the inventor of the whole voucher program that I was talking about earlier. And you see this very frequently. People will confuse Milton Friedman as a libertarian. And yet, you know, Milton Friedman was the guy who invented the income tax being drawn out of your paycheck at every payday. That was him. That was his invention. He's the one that's what got him notoriety, was that he showed the government that, hey, you know, people, if you draw your income tax out of people's payday a little at a time, and then once a year give them some of it back, you'll be able to rob them all you want. They'll never notice it. That was Milton Friedman. So how can you call that libertarian? And you know, to go further, if you just look into it a little bit, look at what contemporaries were saying about Milton Friedman, and look at what Milton Friedman was saying about prominent libertarian contemporaries in his day, like Rothbard and others. Think about what Mises's position was. Mises called him a socialist. Called Milton Friedman a socialist. So if Mises is calling him a socialist, how can we now call him a libertarian? And of course, Gary Johnson wouldn't know, because, you know, he doesn't know what a libertarian is. And that's the same also for what I was mentioning earlier, Wayne Allyn Root. Of course, Wayne Allyn Root is supporter of the voucher program, because all good Republicans do. All right, so Republican Gary Johnson is running as the Libertarian candidate for the presidency, and we're all supposed to get all excited about that. We're all supposed to get behind him and support him. But again, you know, why are you trying to use government to fix government? Why are you trying to streamline government and make government work better, when government itself is based on aggressing upon people? Why are you trying to make government so that it works, so that it does what it does with more efficiency? Because what does the government do? Well, it provides some services. Yeah, but we'd have those services one way or the other. Who'd build the roads? Road builders would build the roads, same people as now, except there wouldn't be layers and layers of government bribery and force and aggression. They would just be people with a financial motivation to build roads. So what really is it that government does for us? Oh, it protects us from other governments far away that would want to come and harm us. So we have to hire a thug to protect us from another thug. We're going to hire a thug to beat us and to rob us and to constantly dominate us. So why? So a thug doesn't come and beat us and rob us and dominate us? No aspect of this makes any sense. We have governments around the world today because people have been conned into it. It's just a massive con game. Going back to Gary Johnson for a minute, Gary Johnson founded an organization called Our America Initiative. And if you go over to their website, to Our America Initiative website, and you want to see what kind of libertarian Gary Johnson is, just kind of take your mouse and hover around there and look at some of the things that it offers to you. Like, they're going to tell you what their position is on the environment, and here's what their position. This is the whole thing. This is their position on the environment. America needs to be a land with a clean environment. We support clean air and clean water action and believe in conservationism. The initiative does not support cap and trade policies as they are currently formulated. Boy, I butchered that pretty bad. But let me just take it apart and cut it up a little bit more. America needs to be a land with a clean environment. Wow, that's a radical statement, isn't it? Boy, that'll teach all those people that want America to have a dirty environment, huh? Yeah, I want America to have a clean environment. Wow, genius. And then it says, we support clean air and clean water action and believe in conservationism. What does that mean exactly? Because if you ask one person, what does conservationism mean? One person is going to tell you, well, we need a bunch of regulations to force behavior upon people, and we need to make sure what they're doing is exactly what we want them to be doing, and that they're not doing anything we don't want them to be doing. That's what conservationalism is to some people. To other people, conservationalism means going out and getting into a forest and maybe cutting a fire break through a forest so that if a forest fire comes through, it can have a chance to fight it, and it can have a chance to stop the fire before it leaps to the other side of the fire break. To some people, that's what conservationalism means. But in reality, it's such a vague term, it can mean anything. So let's go back to this sentence. We support clean air and clean water action and believe in conservationalism. So in other words, regulation. Action. By who? Action, of course, by the government. Libertarian supports action by the government to regulate and control something like environmental. That's not how a libertarian looks at the environmental issue. A libertarian looks at the environment and says, you know what? People take care of that which they own. This is the rule of the tragedy of the commons. When someone doesn't have private ownership of property, they do not have the same level of respect for it, and they will abuse it. But when a person actually owns something, when we have real property rights and a person actually owns something, they tend to take care of it a lot better. Now that's how you fix the environmental problem. You get rid of all the government socialist programs and all the fascist programs and everything that takes away from private ownership, which is what the government does. The government exists on the idea that there is no private property and that the government actually owns all property. That's the basis of the government. If you don't think so, just think about what happens if you stop paying your taxes. Think about what happens if you own a dog and you don't pay the tax on your dog. Think about what happens if you own property and you don't pay your property tax. Ultimately, the government owns it all. So the idea that more government action is going to somehow fix the environment is the exact opposite of logic. People take care of what they own. People have built into their minds, they respect and want to take care of what they own, but they don't care. They don't have as much concern for something that is owned in the commons. So as long as there's no true property right, there's far less initiative for people to take care of things like the environment. And this is basic stuff to libertarians. Gary Johnson doesn't get that, though. If you hover in that same spot over there at Our American Initiative, if you hover over the area four that's labeled economy, what you get is a hodgepodge of conservative talking points that show that Gary Johnson and his people have no grasp of economics whatsoever. And this also came out on Bob Wenzel's interview with Gary Johnson, where he actually lied and tried to pretend like he's talking here to Bob Wenzel, who's an internationally known economist, and he tries to con Bob into believing that he's some kind of expert on economics, instead of just coming right out and say, well, you know, Bob, I really don't know that much about economics. Can we talk about this or can we talk about that? No, he's going to try to con Bob into thinking that he's an economist. If you go back to that website, Our American Initiative, and you hover over the section called the Federal Reserve, this is an exact quote from what it says at the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve Bank needs to be reviewed and managed efficiently. Oh, I'm sorry, effectively. The actions of the Federal Reserve should be transparent. Congress should take a close look at how the Federal Reserve Bank is operated and regulated. If changes need to be made within the Federal Reserve Bank, they should be made. If changes need to be made within the Federal Reserve Bank, they should be made. If my shoe needs to be tied, it should be tied. If a butterfly needs to fly, it should fly. If I need to say words that have no meaning, I should say words that have no meaning. This is pathetic. First off, we understand the Federal Reserve Bank is a private corporation. So Gary Johnson supports the federal government, Congress, taking action against a privately owned corporation and going in and opening their books and looking through them, and then Congress deciding how much more regulations need to be on the Federal Reserve, and Congress needs to decide if changes need to be made within the Federal Reserve. But the Federal Reserve is a corporation. Do we not see the contradiction here of a so-called libertarian saying that Congress should go in and open the books of a private corporation and tell them how to do their business? Is this a good idea? Is this really what libertarians want? Now, I realize a lot of libertarians are going to hear this and they're going to say, no, Federal Reserve bad, Federal Reserve bad. But you should try thinking. The Federal Reserve is a private corporation. Do you want to attack it using the government that created it? So what do we do about the Federal Reserve? What is a logical libertarian position on the Federal Reserve? Should the Federal Reserve be audited? Should the Federal Reserve open its books to Congress? Well, should Walmart? Should GE? Should Monsanto? Should you take something that the government has created and that is clearly a violation of property rights and the zero aggression principle that wouldn't exist in the market normally, a monster that government has created through its aggression, and then you say, well, what we need is for the government to work on that monster. We need Dr. Frankenstein, your monster is ripping the village apart. Can you come down and adjust him? Is that not what we're doing when we ask the government to get involved in private corporations and fiddle with them? Isn't that like asking Dr. Frankenstein to adjust his monster? Why don't we just let the market do these things? Why don't we just let the market fix this stuff? Why do we constantly run to the government to fix our problems, to answer our problems, to save us? From who? From government? Why do we run to the government and ask the government to save us from the government? The government created the Federal Reserve. The government created corporations. The government created all of these things that we're talking about. And we're going to depend on the government to fix them for us? Let me tell you what happens when all we're thinking about is ending the Fed, and all we think about is auditing the Fed. Okay, so what's going to happen when all the American people realize that the Federal Reserve is massively ripping off the American people? What's going to happen? Well, they're going to demand Congress solve the problem. And how's Congress going to solve the problem? More aggression. That's all they can do. It's like, you know, somebody hits you with a hammer, and you're like, can you please stop hitting me with a hammer and fix my injury by hitting me with a hammer? It's the aggression is the only thing the government can do. Every single act, if you take it down to its most minute capability, any act of government is an act of aggression. It is not based on voluntarism. It's an act of aggression. Even when the government is helping you, grabbing you by the throat and shoving money into your shirt, it is still aggressing upon you, and the end result has to be evil. So why would you go to the government and say, you know, hey, you know, audit the Fed. Let's see what's going on in the Fed. Open your books. Well, okay, so if they do, and they will, eventually this will happen. Eventually the Fed will be opened up and the American people will see what kind of a crooked outfit it is, and they'll see how we've been ripped off, and then so what's going to happen? Of course, like I just said, they're going to cry to Congress to fix this problem. They're going to beg government to fix what the government has created. And how are they going to do it? Well, what I was warning about heavily a year ago, I've kind of backed off talking about it lately, but the greenbackers are going to win this argument. Congress is going to start issuing its own money out of the Treasury based purely on fiat. And they're going to eliminate the Federal Reserve, and that's going to be the big solution. But will that solve anything? There's going to be a weird moment of either inflation or deflation, probably inflation, right when this transition takes place. This is going to be a fairly dramatic incident when this happens. And I'm not seeing it, you know, like in 6 months or something like that. But it's eventually it will have to happen. The Federal Reserve will die when people figure out how evil it is. And Congress will offer the solution. Congress will be in control of the money supply. Great. The same people who try to regulate your toilet flow, try to regulate how much water can go through your shower and how warm or cold your water heater heats, those people are going to try to control the money supply. Fantastic. Wonderful. Yay, the greenbackers have won. Whoopee. We've abandoned fascism and we're adopting true socialism. That's what greenbacker the Greenbacker ideology is based on. That's what is socialism? It's when the means of production are controlled centrally and planned centrally by the government. Central planning is socialism. And so what do the Greenbackers want, and what's eventually going to happen? Congress is going to control the money supply. When Congress controls the money supply, that's socialism. That's what Greenbackers want, and they're going to get it. That's going to be a solution that's offered to the American people. And the American people are going to, hip, hip, hooray, we won. The Fed is dead. Yay. Now, look what you're really going to get. But more pure socialism. That's what you get for trusting government to fix government. So then we're going to have a serious inflation problem. Then, all of a sudden, you know, instead of being in the hands of a corporation that has a motive to make money, it's in the hands of 500 crooks who have no motive to do anything other than get themselves reelected. So they're going to spend like crazy, and they're going to inflate like crazy. And when that happens, the American dollar is going to go right down the toilet. Remember the silver and gold I was talking about a minute ago? Yeah, it's up right now. It's expensive right now. It's headed to 35, it's headed to 38, it's headed to 40, it's headed to $100 an ounce. I'm not saying that just because Shire Silver, because I do commercials for Shire Silver. Realize, folks, BadQuaker.com and me personally, Ben Stone, have never received one penny or $1 from Shire Silver. We have never got any money whatsoever. The owner of Shire Silver gave me a trading card as a gift, and I appreciate that, and I will hold it as a gift from a friend. But we are not paid to do the Shire Silver commercials. I do those because it's something I believe in. I believe it's important, and that's why you hear Shire Silver commercials on BadQuaker.com and why you see their link on my page. It's important, and it's important for you to buy silver and gold. Gold if you can afford it. But silver, if it's only one round every payday, and see, Shire Silver doesn't even sell rounds. They sell the cards, the little trading cards. But I strongly urge people to build a relationship with a local coin dealer. And every time you have a payday, just, you know, if you can just afford one or two rounds of silver, just buy them and stash them away in a sock someplace. Just stick them somewhere in your house and just hang on to them, because eventually, this is going to happen with the dollar. Eventually, the Fed is going to be opened up, and eventually, people are going to see how evil the organization is. And eventually, Congress is going to be take over that duty. And when they do, then you're really going to see how evil fiat money can be. You're really going to see the dollar devalued, and then you're going to really see where this is all headed to begin with, right from the beginning. And what you're going to see then is you're going to see a magic institution. That most Americans have never heard of is all of a sudden going to come to light, and that's the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, is going to suddenly come onto the scene, and they're going to have the solution to all of our problems. The IMF is going to have the solution, and what is that solution going to be? A global currency based on gold. Well, not really based on gold, but kind of based on gold. But they're going to say it's based on gold. In using disclaimers, you know, because that's how the politicians talk, just like what I read there earlier from Gary Johnson's organization. They double speak, they talk in circles to where you can't read, you assume you know what they're talking about, but they have ways to get out of what they're saying, so that, you know, they're slimy like that. So the IMF is going to appear on the scene, and they're going to have the solution to all of our money problems, and they're going to claim to have a new global currency based on gold, but it's not really based on gold, but they're going to say it's based on gold, and then they're going to con the American people into accepting it, and then we're going to have a global currency, and then it won't be based on gold, and then the scam will start all over again, just like 1913, except now it's global. Now it's a global currency, and that's the plan, folks. That's where it's been headed. And it's not conspiracy. It's not six guys huddled into some chateau in France all planning out the destruction of humanity. That's not it. This is the natural progression of statism. You could have predicted this, even if you take away all conspiracy theories and throw them all out the window. This is a predictable pattern that could have been seen and was seen by people. People predicted this even in 1913. That this is the obvious progression. This is where it has to go, because this is where statism leads. This is where it leads when you expect the government to fix the government. And so what do you do when you vote? Well, you're trying to get the government to behave better when you vote, aren't you? So you are actually bending government to your will, or you're at least attempting to. So then, aren't you the government when you vote? If your vote means anything at all, then you are the government when you vote. You are using the government to bend the government to the direction you want it to go, or you're at least trying to when you vote. So that's what Gary Johnson wants to do. That's what the Libertarian Party wants to do. That's what the Cato Institute wants to do. That's what the Ayn Rand Institute wants to do. They want to use the government to fix the government. But when you use the government to fix the government, you are the government. You are breaking the zero aggression principle and property rights, because you can't have property rights and a government based on aggression. And all governments as we know them today are based on aggression. But a time's going to come when this is going to change, when the whole world will see the folly of aggression, and aggression will be rejected, and voluntarism will win. And that will happen when there's a market for it. When there's a market for liberty, aggression will be rejected. Folks, for more on zero aggression principle, property rights, and liberty, go to badquaker.com. And thank you very much for listening. Bye.